Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The rulings of the Idda, or waiting period, of a woman who is a widow. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Salatu wa salam ala Rasulihi al-Kareem wa alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam. Allahumma alimna ma yanfa'una wa anfa'na bima alamtana wa zidna ilma wa amalan mutaqabbala wa hikma wa huda. ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا. من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمدا رسول الله. أسأل الله تعالى أن يوفقنا لما يحب ويرضى. أما بعد, respected brothers and sisters in Islam, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Today, inshallah, we'll be continuing in our lessons on the fiqh of marriage from the book Bulugh al-Maram min Adillat al-Ahkam by the great scholar and imam al-Hafidh Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani rahimahullah. And this is taken from the classes given in Masjid al-Nabawi, which was given by a Sheikh Atiyah Muhammad Salim. May Allah have mercy on him. And this is the rulings of the Islamic law, the rulings of the fiqh, or the Islamic law, the rulings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the various issues pertaining to the marriage and the divorce and widows. So today, inshallah ta'ala, we will continue in the lessons regarding the rulings of a woman in her iddah, the rulings of a woman in her waiting period, post death waiting period, of her husband passed away and the woman is in her waiting period, inshallah ta'ala. So the hadith for today is a hadith narrated by Salama radiallahu anha. Salama radiallahu anha. Salama radiallahu anha, she said, a woman said, Salama, she says, I put sabir, which is a type of medicine, on my eyes after Abu Salama, her husband, passed away. So Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, it gives the face a glow, so apply it only at night and remove it during the daytime, and do not comb your hair with scent or henna, for it is a dye. Salama, she said, I asked, what should I use when combing my hair? The Prophet replied, you should use the lote tree leaves. Narrated by Abu Dawud and Nasa'i, and it has a good chain. Okay, so here, beloved brothers, sisters in Islam, we come to the continuation of the issue of what is a woman prohibited to do in her waiting period, her iddah, after her husband has passed away. And we mentioned last time that the Shaykh said that when a woman's husband passes away, she has to wait a period of 4 months and 10 days, during which she is not allowed to accept any proposals from any men. Right? When a woman's husband passes away, during that period, the waiting period of 4 months and 10 days, she is not allowed to accept proposals from any men. And also, she's prohibited from doing anything that would cause her to be attractive, that would cause a man to be attracted to her and to want to make a proposal to her. So from those things that a woman is prohibited to do in the waiting period, does anybody remember? What is a woman not allowed to do during her iddah? Do you remember anything? Can a woman in her iddah, can she go out of her husband's house? She has to remain in her husband's house. We're going to come actually speak about that today, inshallah, a little bit more detail about it. But what else is she prohibited to do? You remember at all, Uncle Nizam? You know what the iddah is, right? Are you familiar with that? The iddah? Okay. There's a husband and a wife. The husband, you know, Allah blessed him for him, he passed away. So now the wife, she has to mourn for her husband. There's a period of mourning in Islam. And it's that period for 4 months and 10 days. She cannot accept any proposals for any other men because she's mourning for her husband. And there's some other things she can't do. She's not supposed to go out of her house without a good reason. We'll talk about that today. She's not supposed to wear perfume. She's not supposed to wear what? Perfume. Because that's what the Prophet he prohibited. We read this last time. Unless she's purified from her menses, so then she can use the perfume only in the area of the menses to remove any bad odor. Also, we talked about wearing the henna. You know how women, they wear the henna to beautify their skin? She's not allowed to wear henna during this time. She's not allowed to wear the eyeliner, the kohol. And we'll talk about that in this hadith. And also, we mentioned last time, she's not allowed to wear niqab to cover up the face. And the sheikh said maybe sometimes a woman covers her face and that could be more attractive than if she uncovered her face. No. Also, she's not supposed to put any type of combing her hair using oil that has a scent, because that would be attractive. If somebody were to visit or she went outside for a need, somebody might smell that oil in her hair that smells very nice. And he might say, let me propose to this woman. But she's not supposed to have any proposals, right? During that time period. Now, so here in this hadith that we just read together, Salama radiallahu anha, she asked the Prophet after her husband died, can I use aloe? Can I put aloe on my face? Sabir is a type of medicine, or aloe. Can she put it on her face after Abu Salama had passed away? It's a type of medicine that people use. So the Prophet he said no, because the aloe, it gives the face a yellowish glow, makes the face more attractive. So the Prophet when he saw Salama wearing the aloe, he asked her, what did you put on your face? She said, I put the aloe, the sabr. He said, don't do that. It makes your face more youthful. More youthful, more, you know, attractive. So the Prophet system, he considered that a type of prohibited beautification during the waiting period. Now, she said, I need to use the aloe. I need it because she had something on her her face that she needed to use it for her eyes. So the Prophet ﷺ, he said, you can use it, but use it at night time. The aloe on her face, and because it made her face more attractive. It has a yellowish glow. So what if she put the aloe on and then she had to go to the store to buy some groceries, and she's in her waiting period? And then somebody might see her and get attracted to her. Right? So just like the perfume, she's supposed to avoid using the aloe. But she can use it at night as a medicine, because at night time she's not going to go out and nobody's going to visit her at night. But only during the daytime he prohibited her from using it. Also, the Prophet ﷺ, he told Umm Salama, don't comb your hair with perfume or henna. The henna. He said, don't comb your hair. Sometimes women, they put henna in their hair to make their hair stronger. Or to put it in the hair to comb it, and then she washes it out. But the henna, does anybody ever use henna or they know anything about it? It has a very strong odor. It has a very strong smell. So if a woman were to put the henna in her hair, and even if she washed it out, when she goes out, people would smell that. And again, that would be a type of attracting the opposite gender, which she's not supposed to do, especially during her iddah. Okay, so henna is a type of perfume. So Umm Salama, she said, what do I use to comb my hair? Sometimes if you comb the hair and it's very dry and brittle, if you comb it, the hair will break and will fall out. So she said, if I can't use henna, what should I use to comb the hair? Because I don't want my hair to, you know, fall out or anything like that. So the Prophet ﷺ, he told her, use sidr. Sidr is lote tree. There's a small kind of tree. It's called a lote tree, sidr, in Islam, or in this Arabic language, excuse me. The sidr leaves, they're used to cleanse. If you're familiar with the sidr leaves, they actually use it when they're cleaning the body. They use the sidr leaves, and they also use it to clean clothing. They'll take the sidr leaves, and instead of using chemicals, this is what they used to use in the past. If they were going to wash like a wool cloak, they would use the sidr leaves, and it wouldn't harm the fabric. And it was also said that using sidr leaves removes magic from a person. And some hadiths, they even say it's haram to cut down the lot tree, the sidr tree. So the Prophet ﷺ, he said to Umm Salama, you can use the sidr tree leaves to comb your hair. Don't use the henna, because the henna has a strong smell, but the sidr tree leaves, like a shampoo, it can clean the hair and it doesn't leave the scent, and it does not leave any coloring on the hair. So this would be allowed to use, because the difference between the henna and the sidr is what? The henna is like perfume. The sidr doesn't leave a strong smell afterwards. So if she goes out after using the sidr in her hair, it's not going to cause the men to look at her and or smell that and be attracted to her. Okay? Clear up to here? Inshallah. We're talking about the iddah for the waiting period, and what is haram for the woman to do. And Umm Salama, she said she wanted to use aloe on her face. The Prophet ﷺ said, don't do that, because it makes the face glow like a young lady. And so he prohibited her from that. But then she said, I need to use it, it's a medicine. So he said, use it at night time, but don't use it in the daytime, because she might go out and she's in her waiting period. Or she might go, somebody might come, some relatives, and they might see that, etc. So he told her she could use it at night. Now, okay, so we'll go to the next hadith, inshallah ta'ala. The next hadith is also narrated by Umm Salama radiallahu anha. From Salama, she says that a woman said, "O Messenger of Allah, indeed my daughter's husband has passed away, and she is complaining about her eyes. Her eyes are, she's complaining about them. Can I put the kohun, the eyeliner, what do they call it in English, the ismid, it's a type of eyeliner that they put in the eyes for a cure." She said, "Can I put it in her eyes?" The Prophet said, "La, don't put it in the eyes." What do you know what it's called, the black that they put under the eyes?
I'm not sure. I think I heard you say it one time. Starts with an A, I think.
Okay. Yes. I'll think of it in a minute, inshallah. But you see people using it sometimes. Women use it for beautification. They call it kuhul in Arabic. Kuhul in Arabic. So this woman, she said, "My daughter's husband passed away, and she's in her waiting period, but her eyes were hurting. So she wanted to use that kuhul in the eyes of her daughter." So the Prophet ﷺ, he said, "No, she cannot do that." Now, Hamza. Okay, so this hadith is part of a longer narration. It's part of a longer narration. And actually the original hadith, when the Salama, she came, and the woman was there, and she said, "My daughter's husband died," the Prophet ﷺ, he actually told her. She didn't want to wait for the waiting period to be over to put the kohol in her eyes, in the eyes of her daughter, as a cure. So the Prophet ﷺ, he actually took her back to the days of Jahiliyyah. And he said in another narration, in the days of Jahiliyyah, the rulings for the women in the waiting period was that, he said, one of you used to stay in the house of her husband in a closet. They would put the woman in a closet, like in the edge of the house, who's in her waiting period. She couldn't sit with the rest of the people. Not in the living room, not in the bedroom. She had like a little area somewhere, like a closet area. She had to stay there for 1 year. One whole year. She couldn't go out. She's not allowed to bathe. She couldn't even wash her face. Can you imagine? In a hot climate where there's people sweat a lot, she was not allowed to bathe or wash, and she couldn't come out of the house. She had to stay in that corner area, like a closet. And then what happened, the Prophet ﷺ was describing this, when she would come out after 1 year of her waiting period, if she were to take a pigeon or a bird and rub it on her body, the animal would die right away from the strength of that, all the dirt and filth that was on her. This is what they used to do in the days of Jahiliyyah. So he said, now you only have 4 months and 10 days. As if he's, you know, reminding the women, and they used to wait a whole year just to bathe. They weren't allowed to bathe. In Islam, it said 4 months and 10 days, don't use the kohol. It didn't say she can't bathe. It just said that she should avoid the beautification, as if to remind her about how it used to be in the days of Jahiliyyah. So here in this hadith, the Prophet ﷺ, he told her she could wear it in the night time, but not during the daytime. Walaikum salam wa barakatuh. So yes, you see how the women were treated in the days of Jahiliyyah, before Islam. A woman whose husband died, she had to wait 1 year for her waiting period. They would put her in a closet, and when she came out, even the animals who, if they touched her body, they would die from the stench. And then Islam, it changed all of that, and it made the mourning period, you know, based on she's not allowed to beautify herself. Can she take a shower? Can a woman in her waiting period take a shower in Islam? Yes. Nothing wrong with washing. She can even use sidr. She can use low trees as a shampoo. Anything, you know, as long as it doesn't lead to men being attracted to her. You know, any type of beautification, that is not allowed. But what about, can she go out of the house? A woman in her waiting period? That's the next hadith, inshallah. We'll talk about is it completely haram for a woman to go out of her house? Or is there some occasions where she would be allowed to go out of the house? Inshallah. So let's go to the hadith together, inshallah, the next hadith. This hadith is narrated by Jabir radiallahu anhu, who said, "My aunt was divorced. My aunt was divorced, and she wanted to go out and pick the fruits from her palm trees. But a man told her, 'No, you're not allowed to go out.' A man yelled at her or dissuaded her. So she came to the Prophet and she said, 'Am I allowed to pick these fruits?' She was in her waiting period after she was divorced. The Prophet said, 'Yes, go and pick the fruits from your palm tree. Indeed, you might choose to give some of those dates away in charity. If you take them, instead of leaving them there on the tree, you might give them away for people to get charity. Or you might be able to give it to somebody as a kindness.'" Narrated by Muslim. Okay, so if we look at this hadith together, this hadith is about Jabir's aunt. Jabir was a Sahabi, and his aunt was divorced. So she was in her iddah, her waiting period. After she was divorced, she was staying in the house of her husband. So the Prophet ﷺ, she wanted to go out and pick some fruits, and a man told her, "No, you cannot pick the fruits of the palm trees, the dates. You have to stay in the house." And so she went and asked the Prophet ﷺ, "Are we allowed to go out of, am I allowed to go out of the house to get these fruits?" He said, "Yes. Maybe you're going to give it to some people, you might make some charity with it." Now, so here's the ulama, they say that a woman who's divorced, or a woman in her waiting period, she is not allowed to go out of her husband's house. A woman who's divorced, she is not allowed to go out of her husband's house unless she has, until her waiting period is over, unless she has some important needs. If she has some needs to take care of, then she's allowed to do that. If a woman was divorced 3 times, she is allowed to leave the house, but if the husband wants her to stay in the house to make sure that she's not pregnant, and so she doesn't attribute, she might go marry somebody else or get pregnant from somebody else, and he wants to make sure that it's known whether she's pregnant or not, he can ask her to stay in the house and have a room for her where she can lock it and go and stay there, and she can stay in the house even if she's divorced permanently for after 3 times. He might ask her to stay there, and she could do that. Can a woman go out of her husband's house in the waiting period if she feels lonely, if she feels like she feels worried about, or she feels like she needs company? Here there's some narrations that some women who their husbands, it was after the Battle of Uhud, they came to the Prophet ﷺ and they said, "We feel lonely at night. We feel lonely. There's no one in the house. So we go to the home of one of the women and we stay with them and we stay there." So the Prophet ﷺ, he said, it's allowed to do that. But when it's time to sleep, go back to your house. Go back to your house. So the woman in her waiting period, she can go out for some needs. She can go out to see somebody else. If she needs to visit somebody for an important reason. If she needs to buy some groceries. If she needs to go to a doctor. She can go out in her waiting period. She can go. What if she has to go to the court? She don't need to go to the court either to file some papers, or she has to be a witness in the court. This is interesting, actually. The ulama say that if a woman is required to do, like, be a witness in court, and she's in her waiting period, if she's a woman who is experienced and she can go and by herself to the court, she's allowed to do that. You know, somebody says she needs to testify in court, she can go out and testify in court. If she's a woman who is not able to go out by herself, she's not really experienced with things, then the judge has to send two witnesses to her house, and she can bear witness in front of them, and then they can go to the court and witness on her behalf. So the ulama say that if a woman wants to go to the courthouse, if she has the experience and she can take herself and do it safely, she can go. You know, she's a woman who's used to going in and out of the house. But some women, especially in their husbands always took care of them, they never really went out by themselves. So for those type of women, she's not forced to go out by herself to the court in her waiting period. The judge can send people to her house and take her witness and then go back to the court. That's allowed to do that in case she needed to file a lawsuit or they needed her witnessing. Okay, so these are some of the reasons it's allowed for a woman to go out. To summarize that, she can go out to earn a living if that's essential for her livelihood. You know, say her husband passed away, this woman here, she was divorced by her husband. The Prophet ﷺ said she could go out and pick the dates from her trees. And the ulama also said she can go to the doctor for doctor's visits. She can go to the market. She can go to the government offices if necessary, inshallah ta'ala. Okay. Alright, so this is some of the reasons where the woman, she's allowed to leave her husband's house. We have one more hadith here, which is actually very interesting. It talks about, again, the issue of a woman leaving her husband's home. She's in her waiting period, her husband died, right? And she's in the iddah. What if she wants to leave the house? What if she wants to leave the house because her husband didn't leave any money for her. Her husband died, and her husband didn't leave any spending money for her. So she wants to go to her father's house or her son, somebody else's house. Is she allowed to leave? This is the actually the next hadith that talks about this. A woman, you see the question? A woman, her husband died, so she's alone in the house. Her husband didn't leave, like didn't give her any spending money, but she's supposed to wait, right, for her 4 months and 10 days. So can she go to her father's house or her brother's house and spend her time there? Or does she have to stay in her husband's house?
It's a necessity, she can go.
It's not a necessity, but her brother's going to spend on her, or her father, so she'd rather go to that house instead of staying in the house of her husband. Is that a good enough excuse?
Because that's a close relative.
Yes?
Close relative.
It's a close relative, but doesn't the husband have a right that she stay in his house? Right? That's part of the right of the husband when his wife, when he passes away. We're going to read the hadith and maybe we'll go into a little bit more. It'll be clear, inshallah. There was actually a hadith here which talks about this issue. There was a woman and this woman here, her name is Furay'a. Her husband went out to find some slaves that had run away. And when he found them, they killed him. And so she became a widow. And so when she found out that her husband was killed, she came to the Prophet ﷺ, and she said that she wanted to leave her husband's home. She told the Prophet ﷺ that she wanted to go to her family's house. Because her husband did not leave her any money, anything to spend. So the Prophet said, okay, you can go to your family's house. Then as she was going out and she reached the courtyard, he sent somebody, or he called her back. He said, come back, Fuaya, come back. And he said, tell me, repeat what you said. Then he said, no, stay in your house until you have fulfilled the period. Stay in your husband's house until you fulfill the period. So she says that I stay there for 4 months and 10 days. And this is what Uthman told her to do as well later on. Okay, so this was narrated by Imam Ahmad. Okay, so here in this hadith, it's the story of Furay'a. Furay'a was a noble Sahabiya. She was the sister of Sa'id al-Khudri. And she was a noble woman, a very righteous woman. In fact, she was she was one of the first women to make allegiance to the Prophet ﷺ. If you've heard of the oath of allegiance called Bay'atul Ridwan, she was one of the women that came and they met the Prophet ﷺ secretly when he was still in Mecca, and they took allegiance to him and said, come to Medina. And there was about 70 Sahaba and a few women. She was one of the women who came all the way from Medina to pledge their allegiance to the Prophet. So she's a very, very righteous woman. Her husband went out. Muaz, you with me? Her husband went out because some of his slaves ran away. But unfortunately, they killed him. So she became a widow. When she found out, she came to the Prophet and she said, tell me, can I go to my family's house? Because my husband did not leave me any spending money. So the Prophet ﷺ, at first he said, yes, you can go. Then he called her back when she had left and he said, tell me what you said again. Let me hear that again. She said, she explained that she wanted to go to her family's house. He said, no, stay in your husband's house until you fulfill the period. He commanded her to stay there. Okay? So this here, the issue that we learn about in this hadith is that the woman has to stay in her husband's house. What about if he didn't leave her any money to spend and her husband dies? She still has to stay there. The reason for that is she has the inheritance, right? He might not have left her any money when he left, but when he dies, she inherits from him. So she doesn't have any spending money, like a wife has spending money, but she has the inheritance that her husband left behind. She can use that money to support herself. So she doesn't go out right away to her family's house. You see that? A widow, she has to stay in her husband's house. But now you have a question about when her husband dies, the house that she's living in, doesn't it get inherited by the other relatives? She might have children, she might have sons, parents. So when those relatives, they inherit the house, are they allowed to kick her out? The woman who's a widow, can they make her leave the house? No. That's her right to stay there. That's right. She has a right to stay there until her period is over. What about if her husband had rented the house out and then he passed away? Can the landlord make the wife leave the house? Her name wasn't on the lease. I know this is back in those days. Say that her name is not on the lease. Islamically, if the husband dies, can the landlord force her to leave the house? No. She has a right to stay in that. The landlord cannot make her leave, according to Islamic law. Even though the husband died and the contract is nullified, he cannot make her leave. What about if the husband didn't pay the rent and she owes rent? Can the landlord make her leave? She's not able to pay the rent? Or say the husband, he paid for 2 months' rent. The waiting period is how long? 4 months and 10 days. So her husband had paid 2 months' rent. She does the 2 months, and then the landlord wants to make her leave. Can he do that? There's no more money. She doesn't have any money to pay him. He can make her leave at that point. Because the rent was unpaid. If the husband had paid the rent, she has to stay there and he cannot make her go out. Because the husband had already paid the rent and she has a right to stay there on the lease of her husband. Now if the husband didn't pay the rent, she only stays there as long as the rent is paid. And then she can go out to her family's house. Unless the family, out of respect for the deceased, they pay the rent on her behalf. They can do that. They can say, we're going to pay the rent for you, stay there and finish your waiting period. This is also allowed to do that. Alright, now we have another issue, which is a very interesting issue, which is this hadith is narrated by Furay'a. Furay'a is a woman, and it's talking about the waiting period of a woman, in that she has to stay in the house of her husband after her husband dies. And we have the issue of, do we accept the hadith of a single woman? Only one woman narrated this. Is that sufficient to accept as a narration from Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam? You need to have two women? Yes? You have to have more than one sahabi narrating the hadith? Actually, for when it's the scholars, they say that even one sahabi narrates a hadith, it's enough to act upon it. It's enough to act upon it. Whether it's a male, if it's a male. What about if it's a female? Doesn't make a difference. The scholars say, whether it's a male or a female, if they're conveying to us a hadith, then we have to accept that. We have to accept that. Marriage, the women's hadiths are accepted. This is one of the examples of all the imams, or the majority of the imams, they took this hadith and they acted upon it. So the women's narrations are accepted. However, something very interesting, we touched on it previously, is that when it comes to marriage, divorce, the hudud, the punishments, the women's witness is not acceptable. For these things, marriage, divorce, and the punishments, a woman's witness is not acceptable. In the business transactions, two women witness counts as the witness of one man. So it's allowed for the women to witness business contracts, but it's not allowed for women to witness the hudud, the punishments, the marriage and the divorce. So the question is, when there's a woman narrating a hadith, the whole population, they learn that hadith and they act upon it. And when you witness in the court, there's only one specific individual who's affected by that witnessing. Right? Say the woman is testifying on behalf of a person. That woman's testimony is only going to affect one person. Whereas if she narrates a hadith, that hadith, the knowledge of that hadith spreads to the whole society. So why is it that the woman is allowed to narrate one hadith, narrate a hadith, and the whole of society acts upon it, that knowledge? But to testify in the court, she's not allowed to testify in the court against a person or in favor of a person when it comes to marriage and divorce and hudud. Why is that? It's a very interesting question. And it's a very important question for us to understand, inshallah. Do you see the significance of this question? So a lot of times you hear people say that in Islam, the woman is half the man. You say, why is that? Because two women have to testify instead of one man. And even in many cases, a woman's testimony is not accepted, like in the hudud in marriage and divorce. So they might assume that means that a woman is worth half of a man. That is not the reason why. The reason why is because when a woman is testifying in court for a person, she has authority over that person. She has a type of jurisdiction over that person, a type of wilaya over that person. So his, you know, when she testifies in his favor, it's as if she has authority over him. And in Islam, a woman does not have wilaya, she does not have guardianship over a man. Women do not have guardianship over men. This is a principle in Islamic law, that a woman cannot be the guardian over a man. The man is the guardian over the woman. The woman is not a guardian over the man. So she cannot testify for marriage and divorce and hudud. When it comes to women's issues, for example, breastfeeding. Did a person breastfeed from another person? When it comes to if a baby was born, was the baby alive or not at the time of birth? Did he cry or was he born dead? This is important sometimes when it comes to inheritance. If the baby was born alive, then he inherits. Say his father had passed away during the pregnancy. If the baby is born alive, he inherits. If he wasn't born alive, then many ulama say he doesn't inherit. So a woman's testimony when it comes to breastfeeding, childbirth, matters pertaining to hidden defects. Say a husband raises a lawsuit against his wife and he says she has a hidden defect in her body. And she didn't tell me about it before marriage. Now I want to cancel the marriage. A woman's testimony about that defect is sufficient. Two women could say that. It doesn't have to be a man's testimony. A woman could say that anything hidden under the clothes, she can testify on that behalf, and that is acceptable in the court of law. Some of the imams, like Imam Shafi, he says there has to be four women testifying. Some say two. Some say even one is sufficient. And the proof for this, what is the proof that a woman's testimony can be accepted when it comes to matters of related to women? There was two people who got married at the time of the Prophet ﷺ, and a woman came and she said, I breastfed both of them, this husband and this wife, I breastfed both of them. So that means that they are brothers and sisters through breastfeeding. So the Prophet ﷺ, he said, tell them to separate. They were surprised. They said, the husband said, you're going to make me separate because of the witness of a woman? He said, how can you stay with her? And it was said. It was said that you breastfed together. So he accepted the testimony of who? A woman in the separating of a husband and a wife. However, Imam Shafi, he has a response to this. He says the reason why he separated them is because he wanted to be on the safe side. Because even if there's a 50% chance that they're brother and sister through breastfeeding, he wanted to safeguard the lineage, so he told them to separate. So Imam Shafi, he said it wasn't only based on her testimony, but he wanted to be on the safe side. But the majority of Imams say this is proof that a single woman, her testimony can be accepted in matters pertaining to women. She saw the breastfeeding, or she did the breastfeeding herself, so the Prophet ﷺ acted in accordance with her testimony, inshallah ta'ala, and Allah knows best. Wa jazakum Allahu khair. Sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Muslim, where you go? You gotta make with it? Okay.